the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and on the show this week, we focus on off-the-track thoroughbreds. Nancy Cook from Canter USA tells us about their nationwide adoption program, but we begin with Colleen Rutledge, who explains why off-the-track thoroughbreds have always been a good fit for her. Well, Colleen, thank you for joining me, because I know that you have quite a few. It's something that you've had a preference in for eventing for a while, isn't it?
It is. You know, they're just so intelligent, and so when you get a good one, they're just so brilliant about stuff, and they've already been developed to have a gallop. So, you know, for us as eventers, that's already a large part of our of what we're looking for, so I just love them.
So when did you decide that that would be your first choice and where to source them?
Well, they're not always necessarily my first choice. I just happen to have more of them because they fit the mold of the horse that I'm looking for. You know, I'm a very big proponent on the fact that I love a specific, you know, really a type of horse. I want them short coupled. I personally like them long legged. I like them to be built uphill. And I want them to have that good, nice, natural gallop. And pretty much across the board, like, that's what I tend to find in my thoroughbreds. And how I kind of came about it is I really got introduced to the thoroughbred breed by, my mentor through Pony Club, Kevin Bowie, because she bred some. And the first horse that I ever learned how to break was a chestnut thoroughbred mare. You know, the antithesis of pretty much everything everybody else looks for, but I learned how to break horses with her, and she and I just developed this connection, and it just grew from there.
So when did you actually start riding off the track thoroughbreds?
I started at about 16. Like I said, this mare Delia was the first mare that I ever learned how to break. She was 2 at the time. She was being broke to be able to go to the track because my boss at the time really believed that the education that they found at the track was invaluable, even if they weren't great racehorses, that to go to the track to learn about all of that stuff and then come back and be riding horses, you know, it helps them. So I've been riding them pretty much since about age 16.
Well, some people might think, oh, a thoroughbred, you know, I'm just an amateur rider. They're going to be too highly strung for me. What would you say to that?
If you find the right one, you know, every horse is different. You can find the warm bloods that are too highly strung for the amateur. You can find the draft crosses that are too highly strung for the amateur. Just because something is touted as a thoroughbred doesn't necessarily mean it's too highly strung. Yes, they are bred to run. They're bred to race. But I've had some of my best amateur horses are off the track thoroughbreds. In fact, I've got one that is going with a really good friend of mine that is an off the track thoroughbred that is excelling in the hunter ring. And she can get on him and go do the hunter derbies absolutely pleasantly. And we specifically went to look for an amateur friendly horse because she's a mother. She doesn't have a lot of time to ride. She wanted something that she could you know, just enjoy and have a good time with, and he fit the bill beautifully. So it's not necessarily the breed that is highly strung. It's individual horses that are highly strung.
And then would be the question of how much they've been racing as to how much you have to undo of that to retrain them.
You know, that goes to how well were they trained. A well-trained racehorse is a well-trained horse. You know, I've got a couple of colts that have come off of the track that are some of the best mannered horses that I've ever had to deal with because they don't allow them to get out of hand. And then, you know, the handling on the ground, if they've been handled correctly and they've been started correctly, then it transfers over into their riding absolutely brilliantly.
And for those that have never ridden an off-the-track thoroughbred, Colleen, they may think, well, this horse has got a different mouth. He's used to pulling. That was his job when he was racing. I need a horse with a nice, soft mouth.
if you train a horse correctly, they will have a nice soft mouth. That's, you know, horses that learn to gallop, they don't pull all of the times, but if you pull back on them, they know that they're supposed to go forward and into the contact with their race horses. But you can teach draft horses to do the same thing. So it's a little bit of a misnomer that essentially these horses, you know, they're trained. Yes, race horses, if you pull back, that they tend to want to go forward. So it does take a little bit of a change of mindset in that aspect. But for the most part, you know, it's you're starting them over to get used to riding them anyways. If you get on virtually any horse and pull back on them and they're upset, they're going to take off.
So let's talk about the dressage then, because they're having to go into an arena. They've never done that before. It's a complete re-education for them. Where do you suggest people start with that? Where would you recommend that they look for those thoroughbreds and begin that education?
Well, just like, you know, people look at the thoroughbreds and say, oh, you know, they've been on the track. Yes, they've got a large number of life experience that your other horses haven't had. But they're also still babies. They're also still young. They haven't been introduced. So you introduce them any way that you would introduce any young horse or inexperienced horse. Taking them to school and shows, setting stuff up at home, setting poles and lines at home so that they can get used to feeling enclosed, riding in an arena so that they get used to feeling like that. And it's you know, it's still just basic good horsemanship of teaching them how to respond correctly to the stimulus that you're putting in front of them.
And you're changing their shape as well, Colleen. Give us some advice on how you begin to do that.
Well, you know, race horses, when you get them off the track, they've, for the most part, either been taught that they're going to be held in front so that they can use that for the balance, or they've been, you know, not necessarily taught to go straight. So you want to change their shape like you would change any youngster. When you start any youngster out there, they're going to be gawky, they're going to be unbalanced, they're going to be, you know, not exactly sure where everything is. So you start just like you start any young horse, even if they're an older, you know, older being 7, 8, 9, that's coming off the track after, you know, years of racing. You want to start them the same way, introducing them to circles, teaching them that inside leg to outside rein, you know, all of the basic horsemanship stuff that you should be doing anyways with all of the horses, you know. And it's you know, sometimes there's a little bit different of a mindset, and you want to make sure that you've got a trainer that is fluid in their thinking, is not necessarily, you know, very rigid and, oh, this is how it always has to go, because sometimes you have thoroughbreds that are a little bit more clever than people give them credit for. They're not just running machines. They're actually thinking, you know, feeling creatures that try to figure out the puzzles, and those are the ones that I'm really attracted to.
Now, what about courage? I know each horse is individual, Colleen, but where do you find these off-the-track thoroughbreds fall in terms of generally being brave for the cross-country, and as they move up the levels too? Have you had many that get so far and they just haven't got it for the higher levels?
Well, you know, I mean, you do get the horses that are good to a certain level and then just lack the confidence. You know, it's a very, very special creature that can step all the way up the levels and do it well. You know, so it's you're constantly looking for that special horse, you know, that like Jim Walford says, has the look of eagles, that knows his capabilities or her capabilities are just unparalleled and unmatched. And it's, as you start to move up the levels and you ask them the questions, the biggest thing is to listen and feel what your horse is responding. Are they smart about something? How do they learn? How quickly do they learn? Do they figure out the puzzles? You know, the puzzles are the footwork and the things along those lines. When I have a horse that starts answering all of those pieces, I start getting excited because he's showing me that he's got the pieces of the upper levels. And it's, you know, I'm always looking for my next 4-star creature, my next, you know, big time horse that's got all of the pieces that fit together beautifully. But it's one of those, sometimes the dressage is a little bit weaker and sometimes the jumping is a little bit stronger, or, you know, it's all of those pieces. So as we're coming around and as we're asking all the questions and moving up the levels, you know, my biggest thing is as a trainer is I'm always asking my horse, is this the job you want to do? When they want to be event horses, their answer is always absolutely.
Well, the other important question, of course, is soundness, Colleen, because often an off-the-track thoroughbred you can get for a donation, and that's why it's so attractive. It's more affordable for many people, especially if they're coming into the sport. But there is always the soundness issue, which without that we don't have a good horse, no matter how talented he is.
Yep. So the soundness, for the most part, if you're going to get an off-the-track thoroughbred, you want to make sure that you've gotten them vetted, that you are comfortable with where they're at, and that you are comfortable with what their injuries are, or that you've got a trainer who is comfortable. If you are not 100% or you are inexperienced, you want to make sure that your trainer is comfortable with the horse's capabilities. Now, that being said, one of the most important things, if you're going to have an off-the-track thoroughbred, is to have a trainer that you can truly rely on, that understands the thoroughbred, their soundness, their weaknesses, how to make them sound, you know, how to make them stronger so that they're sounder, and all of those pieces, so that they can truly be your resource as you're learning to go through this. And you want to make sure that your trainer understands their mindset as well.
And is the off-the-track thoroughbred a horse that you would recommend, generally speaking, Colleen, to any level of young rider or adult amateur at the lower levels?
I would. That being said, there's always a caveat with that. Is I want to make sure that the personality of my horse matches the talent and the personality of my rider. You know, I'm not going to give a high-strung, nervous, adult amateur rider in a high-strung, nervous horse, because the two of them are going to feed off of each other. So, but I'm also, you know, there are some other personalities that can deal with the high-strung, that are calming personalities. So it all is going to matter on what your type is, what your the type of horse that is needed. But, you know, you can find all different kinds of thoroughbreds. Just because they're a thoroughbred doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to be high strung. You know, some of the quietest horses I've had are thoroughbreds that came off of the track because they didn't want to run and, you know, couldn't be bothered to get up any speed. In fact, I had an off the track thoroughbred that we used to pony another horse during a hunt race up to the start line to hold him still. And then he raced in that same race. And he stood there absolutely quietly, completely laid back, no issues, flags are, you know, blowing, horns are blaring, everybody takes off like a shot, he stands there and goes, yeah, okay, took the baton hand off and took off like a rocket, came across the finish line, my girl pulled him up, and he walked back flat-footed to the trailer like, all right, that's my job. You know, that being said, he's also a fantastic fox hunter, so it's not necessarily the breed. You know, the breed has gotten a bad rap for being, you know, high-strung because people have not understood how to deal with them and how to allow them to let down and the whole process behind that. But you can create that same mess with a warm blood. You can create that same mess with a Welsh cob. You can create that same mess with any horse if they're handled improperly.
Well, as you said, you're always looking for your next four-star horse, Colleen. So I hesitate to ask if you're going to share with us where we look for those off-the-track thoroughbreds, because you may be shopping there too.
Well, here's the thing. I have a couple of fantastic people who have amazing eyes that know exactly what type of horse that I like, and they tend to go out and suss through you know, all of the horses. And when they see a horse that excites them, I get a phone call. That being said, you know, going through and looking through all of the websites and you know, it's a daunting prospect because there are so many horses. And I'm a horse person. I love horses. I love all shapes. I love all sizes. You know, I like them when they have a head, four legs, and a tail. So I've finally gotten to the point where I need someone else to go through and shuffle through them for me because I have a tendency to say yes way too fast. This is my own weakness. So that being said, the best thing that I can say for me is that when I'm looking at a horse, I'll get a phone call. She'll send me some pictures. She'll send me some video. My first instinct when I see it is either yes or no. If I start trying to convince myself either way, I always make a mistake. So if I say yes, I go look at it. If I say no, it's not that it's not a nice horse. It's just, it has to strike a chord with me. You know, but the people, when you've got good people that are looking for these horses and they're going through, they're looking for the sound horses. They're looking for the ones that have the manageable, you know, we've got a list of manageable injuries that don't faze us at all because we know how to rehab them. You know, and it's every horse is always a gamble, no matter what. You can get the soundest horse. It's got the cleanest x-rays. There's not a blemish on it. Half the time they end up being lame anyways for something that you have no idea why. Or you can have a horse that has every single possible blemish on them, horrendous, feet ugly, and the thing is sound as a pound and never takes a lame step. So it's that fine line. But when you're out looking at horses, make sure that you've got someone else to play devil's advocate with you.
Good advice, Colleen. Thank you very much indeed.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The Communication Alliance to Network Thoroughbred X Racehorses, otherwise known as CANTA, provides retiring thoroughbred racehorses with opportunities for new careers. Nancy Cook is the Executive Director of CANTA, and she joins me now. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to talk with you.
Well, I'm delighted you can join us because you're a large organization with CANTA USA, haven't you? Right across the country, and I'm sure lots of thoroughbreds going into eventing. So tell us a little bit about the organization and how it operates.
Well, CANTA started in 1997 at a racetrack up in Michigan called Great Lakes Downs. And since that time, we've expanded to areas from one side of the coast to the other. And CANTA operates in two ways. We have what we call phase one, where we have a group of volunteers that go to racetrack on a weekly basis, and they walk around the backsides, and I talk to trainers and identify what horses are looking to find new careers. They take pictures, and they post brief descriptions on our national website, www.canterusa.org. And it's kind of like a public classified type of advertising where we post it free, and then anybody who's interested can go and contact that trainer directly, make an appointment to go view the horse, go to the racetrack. So CANTA really sort of broke down that barrier of people that had horses that were available to the general public for outside racing homes, and then the people who had these horses that were looking for people. So that's what phase one of CANTA does. And then we also expanded the program in some states to have CANTA-owned horses, where we actually take ownership of horses off the track for various reasons, a lot of them being that trainers and owners just want to find a good home for horses, so they trust our organization to do proper due diligence on who gets them and follow them to make sure they're safe. So it's CANTA in phase one and CANTA in phase two.
Well, how do you go about that process then? Say I want a prospective event horse and I come to CANTA, what are the next steps?
If you go to our website, you'll be able just to view all the horses that are available in, let's say, your general area, because they're by the state, so they're by a racetrack. And that is finding horses right at the racetrack, which is a little bit limited because you cannot ride them there, but you can observe them. Some people are very comfortable with that, and some people are not. For those people who aren't necessarily as comfortable doing that, then we highly recommend that you get a hold of one of the affiliates that actually owns horses, which would be the Mid-Atlantic, Ohio, and California, and talk to the people who actually work with these horses every day. Maybe make a trip there. Of course, you have to fill out an application in order to do so, because we do screen our potential adopters. And then just talk to them, because we've been doing this for so many years that we've got a pretty good feeling on matchmaking. if we don't have yet what you're looking for, we'll keep our eyes out for something that might fit the bill for you. So it's really it's sort of a unique organization that we really try and get the right horse in the right home.
Right, so you're basically matchmaking, aren't you? You're a singles agency, I can see. you're matching up the right horse with the right rider. Now, what sort of screening process would the prospective applicant have to go through then, Nancy?
Well, we have an adoption approval form that's on the website, and it wants some reference to make sure that we have the proper horse for you, and that you're comfortable with the type of horses that we're taking in and rehoming. So it didn't ask for that reference. We want to make sure that your hunting and your barn area is safe for your part of the country, and that horse is adequately housed and cared for. So we do check our veterinary references of folks that are looking to adopt our canter-owned horses.
And is there a return policy if the fit is not suitable?
Yes, there is, and we also have a lifetime bill of sale with these horses, so we can follow them. So, and each individual affiliate is a little different in what their specifics are. Many of them just allow you to do an exchange or return an exchange. But I have to say, we work pretty hard to make sure that we do the right match. So it's not often that we do get them in returns, and I'm glad of that, really, because that means that we're doing our due diligence up front to make sure that it's the right horse for the right home.
Now, is that rider then allowed to resell at any time, or do they have to return the horse to you if they don't any longer need it?
No, they're absolutely allowed to resell at any time. We just that we're told of the resale, and that horse also is covered by our contract, which keeps them safe. So we can keep track of where they're going, and so if for any reason that horse needed to be returned to canter, it could, no matter how many times it's been resold.
And obviously the most important question is, because a lot of people think this is an inexpensive way to get started with their first event horse, what are the costs involved?
For us, it's just it's small adoption fee. And I think really a lot of the cost can be, I guess, well, what's the word? I mean, you can kind of judge exactly how much you're willing to spend on it based on how much knowledge you have. Obviously, if you don't have a whole lot of knowledge, then you're going to have to involve a trainer who's done it before. If you have a lot of knowledge on retraining horses for eventing, then maybe the cost won't be quite so much. But in terms of just investing in a horse, the canter-owned horses are not all that expensive.
Can you give us a price range what people could expect to pay?
Anywhere from $500 to $3,500, depending on how much pre-training we've done. Now, we do spend quite a bit of time with our volunteers and working with these horses to make sure that we understand what their future careers are going to be. In other words, we find out whether they like to jump before we ever even put them up for adoption. We find out how stout they are with veterinary checks. So we know a lot about our horses before we ever decide it's time for them to move on into a new career and what that career might be. Not every horse wants to be an event horse, and not every horse wants to be just a pleasure horse either. So that's how we try and make the right match, by really knowing what our horses want to do and trying to match them with the person that wants to do that with them.
Now, what about pre-purchase exam? Is this something that you advise, or is it something that you've pretty much had covered because you've gone through that veterinary process with each horse that comes on board anyway?
Yeah, we always, of course, turn over our veterinary records, but we always recommend a pre-purchase, especially if you have an intended purpose with a horse, just to make sure that horse physically can meet the demands of whatever sport you want to do with it. So we always recommend it. We can give you a list of vets in the area at any canter affiliate. And I think that's true with any horse that you buy, whether it's straight from Phase 1, the trainer off the track, or from a canter-owned facility. And most of our affiliates have on their homepage most of vets that service the general area, so you can contact them even in advance if you need to.
And you've got the country pretty much covered, as I said earlier, Nancy. Just to explain which states that you actually do have a presence in.
Well, we'll start on the east and work our way west. We have canter in New England, which services mainly Suffolk Downs over there. We have the canter Mid-Atlantic, which serves almost every track on the East Coast, Bowie, Maryland, Delaware, Charlestown. Then we have Ohio, which services Thistledown and And, well, now Beulah Park has closed, but they're reopening another one in Youngstown. We occasionally take listings in Cincinnati as well. Tanner, Pennsylvania does not have Phase 2, but they service Penn National Racetrack, so they're very active there. And then we have Kentucky, which services Turfway. And then occasionally taking small listings from farms in the general area. Kentucky is such a big state. We have Illinois now, which serves Fairmont Park. And we have, we go to Texas now. And Texas has just started down there, so they're trying to open in a number of racetracks. California services mostly the northern end of California, which is Golden Gate there. And then we recently are in the process of opening at Emerald Downs up in Washington. So we're growing and growing and growing. So hopefully, that's a great opportunity for racehorses to find new careers.
And how many horses would come through your hands, they then say, in a given year, Nancy? Do you have a sense of that with so many sort of stations, if you will, around the country?
Yeah, we can track the horses that have been listed on the website through Phase 1, the trainer-owned listings. And, you know, it depends on the areas of country, but most individual affiliate will place between 100 and 250 horses straight off the website. So you add that up times the 11 racetracks, and probably about 2,500 horses a year they get placed. But a lot of times we find that horses also get adopted because people are on the backside looking for horses, and they see one, and then they end up with two, and we know how that works. So,
yes.
And then as far as the Kenner-owned horses go, you know, we usually place, like Ohio last year placed 40 horses out of their program. So the numbers are pretty close to 200 horses a year from the horses that Canada actually owns. So when you add that all up through the years, and when I checked, this year's 2014 statistics, has it closed almost 20,000 horses since 1997 when we started.
Well, there's a very good chance then that any prospective adopter could find something with you at Canter, and they can go to your website at canterusa.org to find your inventory around the country then, Nancy.
That is correct. That's correct. There's pictures there, descriptions, and quite a lot of horses looking for homes.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the show and telling us about Canter USA and how you can find an off-the-track thoroughbred and hopefully making him into a rising star in eventing. Thank you so much, Nancy.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
For more information about Canter USA, please visit their website at canterusa.org. This podcast is available for download on iTunes. Until the next time, enjoy your eventing.